Today's episode of Blast Burn Radio is brought to you by Nancy Bot, Flame and Air, and Platinum Riley, and other members of the Blast Burn Nation just like you. If you would like to support Blast Burn Radio, please visit patreon.com/challengeacceptedmedia to pledge your support and begin earning exclusive rewards. Thank you.
Did you get more wood?
Oh, yeah.
Blast Burn!
You are now listening to Blast Burn Radio.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blast Burn Radio. I am your host, Jolly by Nature, and with me today is our Alola boy, Messer Engine. How's it going today, Mess?
It's pretty good. I was on vacation this week. The holiday was this week. All in all, it's been busy, but still relaxing? Restful? Something. Something with starts with an R. So yeah, it's been pretty good.
I hear you there, man. I worked my last day at my old job last Monday, and I start my new job this coming Monday. So I had a whole week off work in between, but my entire family, including myself, was deathly ill for the majority of that period. So I still feel kind of shit, but we're going to go ahead and get on through it. We had Thanksgiving. That was really, really dope here in the States. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our North American listeners. And today, as you are hearing this, or yesterday, or some variation thereof, is my 32nd birthday. We are going strong into my 32nd year on this planet, and hopefully it's less shit than the 31st.
32 is a pretty good year. You have something good to look forward to.
Well, good. Now, if you missed last week's Showdown Spotlight, guys, you may be wondering why it's just the two of us. Unfortunately, hate to be the bearer of bad news, Celeste had a death in the family before the holiday, and she's taking the week off to just try and work through some of that. So be sure to keep her in your thoughts. She's certainly in ours. With that said, we're not bringing you our Week 6 gameplay today, and instead we're bringing you something a little different, and we really hope that you enjoy it. Before we get into today's topic, however, we do still have news to cover. So this is a week of endings in a lot of ways. With the release of Let's Go, we no longer have pre-release news to cover. We are outside of release season for at least a solid month or two before we start getting bits of Generation 8. And by the time you're listening to this, the Year of Legendaries is officially over. It's a wrap. A whole, 10, 11 months of events. They're all done now. However, where there are endings, there are also beginnings. What's getting started? Let's find out in this week's Pokemon news. Here is the Poke News.
The Poke News.
All right, everybody. So a quick reminder that there is a current active event for almost every variant of Ash Cap Pikachu. Hopefully this is the last fucking time I ever have to talk about it.
It won't be.
It won't be. You're right. This event is valid for all American, European, and Japanese copies of both Sun and Moon, as well as Ultra Sun and Moon. These Pikachus are available by shared codes, and these codes are available for the Hoenn, Sinnoh, Unova, Kalos, and Alola variants. The codes are all some variant of the words Let's Go Pikachu, with various numbers just kind of punched in weird spots. That full list of codes is available all over the net, particularly over at Serebii.net. And this event remains active through December the 1st. Also, a quick reminder to something we talked about last episode. Registration for the 2018 International Challenge November is currently live. This tournament uses the standard VGC 2019 Sun Series rule set, which allows for up to two cover legendaries, but no Z-moves, Mega Evolutions, or Primal Revisions. I'd encourage everyone to register for this tournament, even if you're not a VGC competitor, just for the reward. All participants, win or lose, will receive a shiny Tapu Lele, which is very exciting as this Pokemon is not available in its shiny form in-game. It is shiny locked. This is the very first opportunity to pick it up. up. Registration will run through November the 29th, and battles will be active from the 30th through December 2nd. So be sure to participate and pick up your shiny Tapu Lele. Now, last episode, there was a whole lot of Pokemon Go news to cover, and the release of Let's Go means there's probably a whole lot more. Messer Engine, what's going on over in Pokemon Go right now?
Oh, man. A ton of crap. That's not anything new. I feel like I say that every single goddamn week. So we saw a whole bunch of new stuff over the last 2 weeks. The first welcome surprise was the addition of several new Generation 4 Pokemon. Specifically, a big batch of Generations 1 through 3 Pokemon had their Generation 4 evolutions go live. These included Magmortar, Electivire, Rhyperior, Mismagius, Togekiss, Dusknoir, Weevil, Honchkrow, Gliscor, Roserade, and Porygon Z. Now, each of these Pokemon evolve with 100 species candy and a brand new item, the Sinnoh Stone. The Sinnoh Stone is currently a reward for the 7-day research breakthrough, though it remains to be seen if it will stay there or become less common as time goes on. To tie into this release, Niantic launched the Hatchathon event, causing the basic forms of these Pokemon to hatch from 2-kilometer eggs, though unfortunately this event ends on Monday, 11/27, so real fucking soon. So sorry about that, folks. It's just a thing. We couldn't get the news out to you sooner, so hopefully you've been paying attention. Now, we also saw the rollover of our 5-star raid boss, in this case to a new legendary Pokemon, Cresselia. Cresselia will be available in 5-star raids through December 18th. Lastly, with the release of Pokemon Let's Go, we did see some quality of life improvements in Pokemon Go. We saw an increase to the maximum storage cap up to 2,000. As a point of note, this additional storage must be purchased with coins at a rate of 200 coins for 50 storage slots. We also saw the rollout of the CP changes that we previously discussed here on the show, as well as several smaller quality of life features such as Facebook Friends integration, as well as a new visual indicator that a Pokemon was caught prior to the current calendar year, and thus has an elevated chance to become lucky upon trade.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Messer Engine. Now, obviously, the biggest piece of news over the last 2 weeks was the full retail release of Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee. Now, at this point, we've had about a week hands-on with these titles. Messer Engine, do you want to give us your initial thoughts on the games?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I've finished the main game. Like, I beat the Elite Four today on my way back home from Thanksgiving 3, sitting in the passenger seat of my wife's car. All in all, I really, really enjoyed them. I love Gen 1. There's so much nostalgia there for me. And this was, I think, the best level of presentation we've ever seen Kanto in. There's a lot of really great things in here that I do hope that they carry on to Gen 8, particularly the traveling Pokemon in the overworld, the rideable Pokemon, and the way they handled HMs. They did it right, and it was so good. Riding on Rapidash or Haunter or Kangaskhan feels great. Having your Eevee or your Pikachu handle your HM moves continues to give HMs the feel of being powerful moves that your Pokemon can do that gives you access to other parts of the world without outsourcing them to other people's Pokemon with a beeper, which made me super happy. That said, it's not a perfect game. There are some things that, while I think they were fine for Let's Go and their blended approach, are really just kind of convoluted and messy. The AV system that replaced the EV system in this game is really confusing, especially if you're familiar with the way it works everywhere fucking else. And the way that candy level ups are handled are also just kind of asinine, especially since you can't feed your Pokemon multiple candies at once. You literally have to slam A over and over and over and over and over again. And when you're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of candy, that's an issue. Somebody did not think that through. But all in all, I mean, I could probably talk about this for a whole fucking show, but all in all, I really liked them. They were very well done. They were not a quick cash grab, which was great. And while there are some things that could have been better, overall, I have a very good opinion of these games at launch.
Well, good, good. I'm really glad. I haven't spent nearly as much time hands-on with Let's Go as you have. Full disclosure, actually, my wife has been gobbling it up like hotcakes, and she normally doesn't do that with Pokemon games. Like, she played Sun and Moon and played them to the end, but not like this. Like, it wasn't, I can't wait to get home and put hands on my 3DS, and it has been that way with Let's Go. So I've been more than content to just kind of sit back and let her play, and watching her love them so much is enough, honestly. If I never play and enjoy them, I will still consider it money very well spent because of how much enjoyment she's getting out of them. Like, that's enough. I will say that with the time that I have spent on them, I'm not particularly surprised. Like, it's, I feel about them how I expected to feel about them. They're polished. They're well made. They are capital N, capital F, capital M, not for me, TM. Like, that, I am not the target audience of this game. There are a lot of things that I don't like about it. I will play them thoroughly. I will shiny hunt in them because I do think that the new shiny mechanics and being able to see a shiny spawn on the overworld in real time is fucking dope. But I'm still probably going to put more hours into Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon on my 3DS than I am into Let's Go until Generation 8 launches. Like, the 3DS is still my Pokemon console because it's still the console that is giving me my type of Pokemon game. And that's fine. That's not anything out of what was expected.
It's really funny. Like, I feel like I'm so much the opposite. Like, I played through Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon recently, and I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the post game. What I've played of it. I still have a little more to go. But realistically, like, I'm done with that game. I'm never going to go back. Like, until we get there on our series, I have zero interest. I'm never going to complete the decks. I'm never going to do any of that. I'm not going to shiny hunt there. I don't care. Like, it's done for me. I can see myself coming back to Let's Go for a lot. And not necessarily because I particularly like the candy mechanics or the way that certain things were presented. It's just, it feels like a nicer place to me. I really, really enjoy being there. And I don't think there's anything wrong with either opinion, honestly, just for the record. But I might actually complete the entirety of the post game and beat all the Master Trainers, which is, spoilers, you guys, I have never fully completed everything in a post game since Red, Blue, Yellow. And I'm considering doing it for Let's Go. And I think a lot of that for me is how much I love Kanto and the Mon there. But yeah, it's just weird. I haven't been this excited about, like, finishing up everything in a Pokemon game in a really long time.
Well, that's awesome. And there's no surprise there. I think we've established by now, Mess, that it's just a rule of our show that if there is a thing in Pokemon for us to disagree on, we are going to do that. And that's fine. Like, we're different people. We value different things in these games. And that's valid. I will say, the one really direct criticism that I am prepared to level at these games is that the motion mechanics are fucking ass. And if they weren't prepared to polish them more, they should have fucking scrapped them. Because I'm sorry, I can throw that damn Pokeball the exact same way with the exact same force three times and have it go in three different, wildly different fucking directions for no discernible cause, and it makes me want to break the fucking Switch. I have to play it in handheld mode, which is a problem because when I get around to streaming it, I can't play it in handheld mode.
I have caught, no joke, 400 Ponytas in the last 48 hours, and I have gotten so good at, like, throwing to the left and right with little flourishes of my wrist that it no longer bothers me. But initially, I was really pissed and confused, but I figured it out.
Apparently, I'm going to have to hit up the YouTubes for some tutorials, god damn it, which I shouldn't have to do in this stupid game for babies.
You just got to give it to your kids and see if they figure it out right away, and then you'll feel real bad.
Yeah, that'll probably immediately happen. Jesus Christ. All right, guys. Well, we also got something else in the last 2 weeks that was, it was an extremely pleasant, unexpected surprise. Almost 2 weeks ago today, we got the first full cinematic trailer for Detective Pikachu, the movie. The one that has been a constant meme that it is not starring Danny DeVito. It was really unexpected in a lot of ways, particularly in the art direction, which is far more realistic than any previous official take on Pokemon has been. Messer Engine, what are your thoughts on this trailer?
I was pleasantly surprised. I laughed really hard. I was at work when the trailer came out, and I just saw people posting in the Discord, like, screenshots from the trailer, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? So I went on break. Like, literally that minute, I went on break, and I went downstairs to the break room and watched the trailer. And I laughed, because to me, it feels like Ted for kids in Pokemon, because Ryan Reynolds' Pikachu couldn't be anything other than fucking Ted for kids. And just for reference, if people aren't getting that, Ted is a movie with a childlike teddy bear that comes to life and is just irreverent and vulgar. And obviously Pikachu is not that, but Ryan Reynolds is still fucking Ryan Reynolds.
It's tiny, furry, electric fucking Deadpool.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I thought it was good. I'm actually excited to see it now. Whether it's totally ridiculous or not, I will definitely be in that theater, which means that the trailer did its fucking job.
Yeah, they've pretty thoroughly won me over. I was a pretty big critic of the concept of this movie even being a thing, and they have won me over wholesale. The art is gorgeous. Like, I would have never thought to portray Pokemon in this way, but they look so incredibly natural. Like, Psyduck with feathers and fucking fluffy-ass Jigglypuff. Like, it works. Although, Greninja is moist in a way that I am not entirely comfortable with. Like, I'm not so sure. Like, it changes how I feel about that Pokemon to see how damp it is. But
Mr. Mime is still fucking creepy.
but adorably so. It's so good. It's the best. The sense of humor is spot on, and I cannot express how incredibly grateful I am that it's not just a bunch of Gen 1 Pokemon. It's not just original 151 boys. Like, in the foreground as well as in the background, like, there's a market scene, right? Where the main character and Pikachu are going through this, like, crowded, like, vendor stall marketplace. And people have paused on that scene, and they've zoomed in on so many different places. And there are so many different Pokemon around. Like, there's a group of Emolga on the awnings of one of the stalls, just, like, hanging out, chilling. And there are so many little references and callbacks all over the place in the signs and in the brand names on the goods. Like, I think they were listening to BBR Adventures, TMTM, Do Not Steal, because they stole a bunch of our shit. But that's cool. You can have it as long as you make this movie good and I can watch it and see it with my eye holes. It's great. I love it a lot. I'm really looking forward to watching Ryan Reynolds zap the world.
Yeah, it's gonna be real good. And I'm really pumped. It's going to be fun. I think I'm going to laugh a whole lot. And frankly, the way this year has gone, I'm going to need some laughter in 2019.
Yes, that is the damn truth. Now, lastly, guys, we do have a little bit of follow-up to last episode's Blastburn Radio community news. First and foremost, thank you so much to everyone who has been supporting the show, and especially those of you who have decided to support the show financially via Patreon. We pulled a mammoth swine and we busted on through the first 4 stretch goals, which is utterly insane. It exceeded all of our expectations, and we're really looking forward to bringing you a bunch of really cool shit, including merchandise. We're going to be opening up a merch store, and we'll get you more details on that as soon as it's live. We're going to be commissioning some new original emotes for the Blastburn Radio community Discord, so that'll be really, really fun. We'll get to put all of our favorite memes in little adorable picture form. And of course, we're able to now bring you guys the Blastburn Radio Community Draft League. And none of these projects would have been possible without your support, so thank you. We've also received a ton of valuable feedback from you guys, and with that in mind, we've decided to make a few changes. Due to the overwhelming enthusiasm of the community towards our newest project, Blastburn Radio Adventures, we're dedicating more resources to it. We are proud to announce that effective immediately, BBR Adventures is going to be a bi-weekly show. Now, with that said, the reason it wasn't bi-weekly originally is because this show is very resource-intensive to make, and we had to make sure that we could actually make that commitment. In order to better facilitate this, we are removing Showdown Spotlight from our regular release schedule. Please note, this is not the end of Showdown Spotlight. That series will continue. We will still make and release these episodes as we are able and as we're inspired to, but it will no longer come out every other week scheduled. Obviously, this, as well as with any other changes, your feedback is welcomed and appreciated. This change in particular will necessitate some alteration to future stretch goals in the Patreon. Biweekly Adventures was on that board, so we're going to have to move some things around to make sure that we're still rewarding you guys at reasonable and appreciable what's the fucking word I'm looking for here? Yeah, margins. That's not the word I wanted, but that's the one we're going to go with. and we'll be sure to keep you guys posted once those goals are finalized. But we are prepared to announce that our next goal at the $300 tier will be a Patreon-exclusive cooperative Nuzlocke Let's Play with myself and Messer Engine, and that we'll be using a totally original rule set, a new type of lock challenge that we have come up with ourselves. So look forward to that. Overall, once again, just a huge thank you to everyone who's a part of our community, and a very special thank you to those of you who support the show with your dollars. It's really, really appreciated.
Yeah, thank you very, very much. I let Steven do all the talking there, but seriously, from himself, Celeste, and myself, we really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. So this week, we've actually decided, in lieu of our Nuzlocke World Tour, we are going to say Alola to the Alola region once again, and we are talking about Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. Now, this might seem like real weird timing for that. We just got a new Pokemon game, and we're going back to talk about the one before it. But this felt like a really good and interesting conversation to have right now for a couple of reasons. While there was a lot of salt aimed at these games at their release, frankly, it's also just kind of trendy and popular to hate what's new. And now that we're a year out from their release, 2 years out from the release of Sun and Moon, and Let's Go is the newest game that has the big target on its back for a whole lot of shade, it felt really appropriate to revisit Alola and the Ultra Megalopolis and kind of see how they hold up. Additionally, Mess and I both just finished playthroughs. I just finished my crazy German language shiny lock, and Mess finished his first ever playthrough the games. So let's go ahead and jump into our thoughts on these games, how they stand up to the original Sun and Moon experience, how they hold up to other third version games in the series like Platinum and Emerald, and just how well they stand on their own legs. So, Messer Engine, I'll go ahead and let you lead in here. What did you think of Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon?
I thought they were really good, honestly. So, when they came out, I didn't really know what to expect, right? And I think that was one of the things that was the big question that we were discussing leading up to their release. People were like, is this Black and White 2? Like, is it a sequel? Is it a third version? If so, why are there two versions of it? Like, what's the deal? And I was lucky enough to actually find time to play it after having some distance from Sun and Moon. And I think that certainly impacts my appreciation of the titles. I didn't come right off of Moon and then pick up the other cartridge and start. There was like months and months between where I could go, oh yeah, this is neat. I didn't just like do all this, because a lot of it is the same. But I think that a lot of the differences really make it stand apart and are going to collectively in the community be well regarded as we get more distance from the titles, if that makes any sense. And then we'll talk about the reasons why, I think, as we dig in. But my initial reaction to them is very positive.
Well, good. For once, Mess, I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that there are a number of reasons why Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon had a really poor initial fan response, and a lot of them are 100% Game Freak's fault. They did not do a good job managing community expectations of what these games were intended to be. They also did not really do a good job with laying out their release schedule. Like, can you imagine, just take a step back and imagine what our opinion of Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon would look like if Let's Go had come out last year and Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon launched last week. Like,
yeah,
it'd be so different. Or, you know, even if they'd been able to get Let's Go out last year and they released Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon as Pokemon Stars as the revamped edition on the Switch, like, how much that would impact fan enjoyment of those games. You're right, there was a lot of initial can't be asked, can't be bothered, because they came right on the heels of Sun and Moon a year later. And it's, for the first chunk of the game, it is absolutely a repeat of the same experience. And so you had a lot of people who just said, well, I just did this, I'm not interested. And even a lot of people who were critics of Sun and Moon who said, wow, this is the same game, I couldn't get off the first island the first time because it was so boring, and you just gave me the same first island. No, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And having them stick close to the original experience, at least in the early game, isn't necessarily a flaw. Emerald does the same thing. Platinum does the same thing. Like, it's an established formula in the franchise, but releasing them so close together with that formula, I think, was a huge lack of foresight, and one that hopefully Game Freak has learned from and won't repeat. But yes, viewing them on their own, aside from those outside distractions, they are absolutely phenomenal Pokemon games, and I can't wait to talk about all the reasons why.
I feel like if you were a new Pokemon fan, right, or even one that was absent from the series for a while, and you went to your local GameStop or to Walmart or wherever, or even on the Nintendo eShop, and were like, hey, I want a Pokemon game to play. I don't own a Switch. I can't play Let's Go right now. It's the big craze. And you picked up Ultra Moon or Ultra Sun without playing Sun or Moon, you would have a fucking fantastic time. Like, because you have none of that, like, original shade to throw there. Like, you didn't just go through it. Like, you just picked it up. You'd be like, God damn, this is a really fucking good game. And I think that really speaks to its quality overall, is if you came to it sight unseen, you would have a goddamn good time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Although, and again, this is one of the most prominent criticisms, and it's a valid one. If, you know, if the people that you're alienating are the people who spend money on your products, then that's a problem.
No, absolutely.
But no, you're totally correct. They're phenomenal games, especially when they're viewed outside the spectrum of fandom. What did you think of the technical aspects, the gameplay itself?
So the gameplay itself, both in Sun and Moon and Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, were very high to begin with, right? There's a lot of criticism leveled at both of those games for how hand-holdy they are and how tutorial-focused they are and how, like, in some cases, and we'll get to this a little later, how story-driven they are, none of which are bad on their own. And I think that for a lot of people, their first playthrough was magic of the original Sun and Moon. It was going back when they were like, I got to go through all this again. God damn it. That it was a problem. And yes, of course, that mentality impacted people's opinion of Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon when they picked it up. As we just discussed, the first island is very much the same, but it doesn't change the fact that the presentation level overall is very, very high. It's a beautiful game. You know, attacks and animations, the Pokemon design is very good. The characters, I think, in a lot of cases are likable, even antagonists. Like, we talk about Guzma a lot because he's your boy.
He is my boy.
but I really do think that in a lot of cases, all of it is done to a very high degree of polish. And the decks in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon is also very interesting, I think, more so than in the original games. And what was the other thing I really wanted to point out here? Oh, they had to break a lot of conventions for these games, right? Both Sun and Moon and Ultra Sun and Moon. They had the island challenge instead of gyms. Like, they overhauled the HM system, which I felt that they fell short on for a lot of reasons, but it was still better than having a move locked in your Pokemon's fucking slot for the whole game. I'm looking at you, Cut. but yeah, like, overall, they did a lot of overhauling of traditional Pokemon elements and did them very well and did them in new and interesting ways. And I thought that was very valuable.
No, I absolutely. And I would agree with pretty much all of those bullet points. They're all really solid and really well stated. I've gone on record before that I'm not the hugest fan of ride Pokemon, that I feel like it takes something away from the experience of being a Pokemon trainer and being able to say, I can go to these really inhospitable places because I have these powerful Pokemon. And now it's just, let me pull up Uber on my phone and dial 1-800, give me a fucking Tauros. but But taking HMs out of party slots was still an overall very positive thing. And you're absolutely right. That's one thing that Let's Go nailed, because it's your Pokemon that lets you traverse those obstacles. And that's really the only tweak that this idea needed to be really, really good and valuable. I don't think Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon get enough credit for how hard they are, because these are really, really difficult Pokemon games. And I know what somebody, at least one of you, is going to immediately go, yeah, LOL, right, EXP share. But here's the thing about the difficulty in newer generation Pokemon games, right? In X and Y, in Omega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire, in Sun and Moon, and Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, is a lot of that, those things that make the games easy now, are opt-in things, guys. You can turn them the fuck off if you find that the game's getting too easy. And if you don't out-level everything, it's really fucking hard. Like, some of the trial battles, some of the totem Pokemon in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon are some of the hardest Pokemon fights I have ever done. Totem Araquanid is a fucking monster. It is a water bug that is not weak to grass, that threatens your grass Pokemon with super effective bug attacks. It has a berry to reduce electric type damage if you bring an electric mon against it. And guess what? It has ice stab, or not ice stab, but it has Aurora Beam, motherfucker. So if you bring a bird, you best come prepared, because it's going to fuck your whole life up.
The one that really stood out to me, honestly, was the challenge at the observatory, the electric challenge.
Yes.
I legit went in there expecting to raffle stomp that challenge, and it fucking humbled the shit out of me. I was like, I can't do anything. It's endless damage and recovery and protection, and I just can't get through it. I did, with one Pokemon alive. It was terrifying to go through. And, you know, you don't see that in a lot of Pokemon games today. Like, it was brutal in how it set up the challenges and expected you to be able to adapt to, honestly, a really dangerous setup where they could call for additional help, too. Like, extra Pokemon joining the battle. And a lot of times, those Pokemon were really well chosen, like, partner pairs.
Yeah, and frankly, Ultra Necrozma is, in my opinion, the single most difficult boss battle in all of Pokemon. If we're looking at single Pokemon bosses, at least. I mean, you could make an argument that Cynthia and her Garchomp are up there as well, but fucking Ultra Necrozma, unless you are over-leveling the whole game, you are coming into that fight under-leveled, and if you're coming into that fight under-leveled, Necrozma is going to hand you your ass on a silver platter. It's disgusting.
Even if you're, like, over-leveled, he's still hard. That's what's crazy. So, just so you guys know, I started Ultra Moon when we were in Season 2. So, I brought over some boys from my Silver and Gold virtual copies on my DS, because I wanted to run a Feraligatr and a Crobat. Right? So I brought those over. So I had a bunch of Pokemon that leveled very quickly, even aside from the EXP share. And I was playing a casual run, so I wasn't really worried about it. And by the time I got to Ultra Necrozma, like, my Feraligatr was pretty hefty. And he could still get nearly one shot by that thing, even several levels above or more. It is dangerous. And honestly, like, I'm terrified to Nuzlocke that game now, specifically for that reason. It is very easy to TPW there in a Nuzlocke.
100%. When we get to Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, maybe when we get to Sun and Moon, we're going to have to alter our rule set to allow for limited use of items, because we're not going to get through the series if we don't.
Yeah, it's gonna be bananas. I'm not looking forward to it. I'm sure you guys will enjoy all the blood, but the rest of us here on the show will just be terrified.
Yeah, that's about right. Now, from a more aesthetic standpoint, like if we're talking about the presentation of the games and their story, I think, because those elements kind of go hand in hand to a large degree, especially in games that are as story driven as Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon are. Again, obviously, as we mentioned before, the story largely follows the same path as Sun and Moon's narrative. If you liked Sun and Moon's narrative, you're probably going to like Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon's. There is one significant place where it is lacking in compared to Sun and Moon, but for the most part, I feel like the places where the story diverges, it diverges in a positive manner. It's better for it. There's only one place I can point at where I really feel like it's worse.
Is it Lusamine's story? Because it gets gutted.
Yeah, it's absolutely. And I feel like some of the ways, like the different direction that they went with Lusamine could have been really interesting, but having her take all of the same actions without any of the same motivations just felt confusing. Like, if they wanted to motivate her characters so differently, she should have done different things. That's just my opinion, though. But otherwise...
No, you're right.
Otherwise, I feel like every character came out of that stronger, except for Lily and Lusamine, frankly. Gladion was a more believable and interesting rival. Hao was a far better character overall. He was a stronger rival and also a better friend. He was less bland and more interesting as a character.
He had a lot more confidence, too, which was really nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Almost all, if not literally all, of the trial captains got a little bit more screen time and a little bit more development, and that was really good. And more interaction with other characters. You know, Hao would be back on Melee Island training with Alima when you, in between times that you saw him. You know, the three on Akala Island, Mallow and, it's been too long since I watched the anime. I'm starting to forget their names. Kiawe and what's your face? The ugly one.
Yeah, I'm terrible with names.
Lana. I like Lana. I'm not talking shit. I just couldn't pass up a good strong bad reference. But like, you'll find them all just like chilling together, you know, in the jungle, like when you go back to look for them. Like they do things when they're not around the player character, which is something that I really like to see in these games. We'll get there in a couple of weeks, but that's one of my biggest praises of Generation 5. I love the fact that the gym leaders leave their gyms and interact with each other and do shit. It's fantastic.
Well, it's really, I think, not to get on a big tangent about that, because we'll definitely talk about it at the end of Series 5, but as it pertains to Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, it's really important because it makes those people real instead of stationary objects in a virtual world. Like, the fact that they have friends, that they interact, that they do things when you don't see them, that makes them actualized. Versus just a bit of programming that you had to get by. And I think that's really important for immersion in Pokemon games, in all games, really. But especially for Pokemon, where things can feel kind of like a maze where there are a bunch of bushes in the way just preventing you from going forward. Like, you look at Red and Blue. Red and Blue are very much like that, right? That's why we have HMs, to halt progress. And nobody does anything outside of the spot that they stand in forever. But we're better than that now. So good. And it's good to see them actually keeping those lessons in mind as we move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, again, on the flip side of that coin, Lily and Lusamine's story and development took a huge hit in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon. So, in case it wasn't clear from the title of this episode, spoilers if you have not yet played either Sun and Moon or Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon. I'm about to get into some very key plot points here. But in the original games, it is highly hinted, though never outright stated, that Lusamine came in contact with Nihiligo before the story even began, before you met her, and that she became corrupted by its neurotoxin, that it affected her brain and her judgment and all of her decisions thereafter, and she's motivated solely by being together with the Ultra Beasts again, because she's corrupted. She is fundamentally flawed, she is mentally ill, and that informs all of the terrible, terrible things that she does throughout the course of that game. I mean, she tortures Pokemon, she freezes them alive, she drives away both of her children, she engages in crime, all because she is unwell, and she is motivated only by being close to Nihiligo again. And that makes sense. Her actions in that game make sense from that context. And Lily's forgiveness of her at the end of it makes sense because she was not wholly herself. I think any of us who have loved ones who are the victims of addiction or severe mental illness can really resonate with that forgiveness and understanding that the person that I love is still in there and the parts of them that I love are not responsible for these horrible things that they've done. It felt very raw and it felt very real. And that's all gone in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon. In Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, before Lusamine comes in contact with the Ultra Beasts, she comes in contact with the Ultra Recon Squad, who inform her that, hey, these Ultra Beasts are really bad news potentially, but even more so, there's this thing called Necrozma that stole all our light, and it's coming for your light, too. And so in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, Lusamine is trying to act the part of the hero. She believes that she is the only person who sees this oncoming threat, that she's the only person equipped to stop it, and she's willing to do anything and everything to save the world, which is a really interesting flip of that trope. And it's really, really cool if it held up to any degree of scrutiny, and it just fucking doesn't. Particularly given the fact that that same Ultra Recon Squad has at their disposal either a Solgaleo or a Lunala that they can use to just travel Ultra Space at will, and yet she continues to just torture fucking Nebby to open wormholes because reasons. Like, it doesn't even make sense. It's not logical, and it's a real disservice to that character.
They were like, we ain't sharing that knowledge. You look like a crazy woman.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's really dumb. And again, that is the one big, bright flaw in an otherwise really, really good, solid RPG story. I mean, it's not fucking Tales of Vesperia. It's a Pokemon game. But this is... And this is coming from someone for whom Black and White is my favorite Pokemon game, and in large parts due to the story, I think that Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon rivals Black and White in terms of storytelling.
I haven't seen all of Black and White, so I couldn't tell you, but I thought it was good overall. I enjoyed it a lot, which isn't really a surprise. I liked Sun and Moon an awful lot, too. There were flaws in that game's story as well, but overall, it was good, and I enjoyed it a lot.
What did you think of, like, the in-game presentation, like the audio and visual presentation of these games?
Like, from the technical side of things, like the score and the cutscenes? Like, I just want to get an idea of what you're actually asking.
Yeah, like what did you think of, like, the environments and the audio and all that good stuff?
I mean, I thought all of it was really good. Like I was talking about, like I felt overall that the presentation level on these games was really high. And that level of polish is seen in just every small aspect, from, you know, the graphical presentation to the score to the music to how the islands are varied, even though you can clearly tell you're in a specific region and a lot is the same. There's enough different to keep it visually interesting. I really wish that they had done something with the soulless eyes of the characters, because it freaks me out every time I play the game that my character can, like, do all these amazing things and more than has ever been possible in a Pokemon game, but the eyes are dead. Everyone I stare at, I just have this dead, soulless look.
See, and it's really funny to me because I think, if anything, Let's Go is worse on that note. Not for the player character. They clearly took notes from Sun and Moon and they said, okay, we have to animate the player character's face better. And they do. But the NPCs in Let's Go are just fucking dolls. They just are. There is no life to almost any NPC in that game. And I think that a lot of it is... the engine that they're building these games on, because they clearly built Let's Go on the 3DS engine. They just updated it and upgraded it. And it's showing its age. Like, it's definitely showing the years that it's been since they built it for X and Y. And hopefully when Generation 8 comes, they build something new because it's ready for it, certainly. But yeah, definitely lifelike faces is not the forte of Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, and particularly for the protagonist.
I know it's a small thing, but it really, really bothers me. Probably because in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, and in Sun and Moon, you spend an awful lot of time looking at your character. like seeing their expression, talking to people. So having that be something that isn't there or isn't fully realized is more impactful than it would have been in previous titles, where you don't get those close-ups, you don't necessarily get the cutscenes. Like, those things matter once you move into that level of presentation, and they didn't nail it. In the grand scheme of things, it's minor. Like, it wouldn't make me hate the games, either set, but it is there. Also, the games are just really beautiful. I think that's also true of Let's Go. They're just really pretty to fucking look at.
Yeah, no, they really are. And especially, like, there's a lot of environmental places that very clearly they just stepped their fucking game up when it came from Sun and Moon. Like, it's the same area, but, you know, now you're approaching it at twilight and there's, like, a fucking sunset in the distance and there's fucking butterflies and the flowers and shit. Like, they clearly put time into the details for the Ultra games that did not go into Sun and Moon. And it shows, and it's really, really appreciated. I like the music in all Pokemon games. That shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody at this point. It seems like every game we play, I'm like, the score was really great. Because I think that for the most part, they're all very, very like fitting to the area that you're in, and they do something for me. I like it a lot. I know that you said you hadn't like completed it entirely, Mess, but what did you think of the post game?
I'm enjoying it. Team Rainbow Rocket cracks me up. I thought it was really cool to be able to go visit these alternate versions of the big villains from the series where they were successful and fight them with their legendary Pokemon, right? That's just really cool. And it gives us an opportunity to look at some characters we haven't gotten to see really since their original debut and see what they're like in victory, right? Because in narratives, victory or defeat impacts characters in different ways. It impacts character development because, and we talk about this on Adventures to a certain extent in our setup episode, failure is a really important part of personal growth and like understanding. Whereas success, while great, can lead to additional hubris. So getting to go see the leader of fucking Team Magma be like, yes, I did it. I made land for everyone, and be like, yeah, how'd that work out for you? And he's like, I don't know. I was snatched up before I could see the results. And I'm like, yeah, spoilers. It didn't go well. You probably want to stay here. I really enjoyed it. It was really cool. I liked seeing all those characters in 3D, which was rocking. I haven't gotten a chance to fight Giovanni and his Mewtwo yet, though, which is a bummer. I'll get there at some point.
So, for me, the single biggest disappointment in all of Pokemon is that when you fight Giovanni and his Mewtwo, that Mewtwo is not wearing the cybernetic armor from the anime, from when Giovanni was controlling Mewtwo. If he would have had that armor, it just would have been 10 out of 10 best game ever. But he doesn't. He's just a fucking Mewtwo. He's a Mega Mewtwo Y, which is plenty scary, but he's still just a Mewtwo. So, the Team Rainbow Rocket stuff is really, really good. It's really fun and interesting that they give you like an old school, like Silph-Co style villain base to fully explore with fucking tile puzzles and games of Simon and everything in between.
And fucking teleporters.
Yep. It's really great and nostalgic. They were clearly aiming to hit that nostalgia button, and they did pretty hard. As you said, Mess, it's super interesting to see how those characters were affected by victory or defeat. And I find it really interesting that while, like, as you said, both Maxie and Archie, they didn't get to see enough of their victory to feel anything other than, yes, I did it. Now I gotta get back so I can actually enjoy it. Like, Cyrus and Lysander were both very melancholy. Like, they realized that what they got wasn't what they were actually setting out to get, and they were pretty bummed out about it. Meanwhile, Getsis and Giovanni are just goddamn megalomaniacs who don't give a shit about anybody but themselves. But, you know.
Oh, man, I gotta tell you, this is just kind of a funny aside, but when you get the call initially at the start of the Rainbow Rocket postgame, and what's-his-face asks you to go to the plaza there because it's been taken over. He was like, what are we gonna do? They've taken over the festival plaza. I was like, let them fucking keep it. Like, Seriously, let's leave and never come back.
I will say probably the biggest insult I can give to Let's Go ever is it immediately makes people miss the Festival Plaza with its shitty online service. That says something. But no, that's really valid. I love the fact that Guzma's a good guy in the Rainbow Rocket storyline, that he's just like, I don't want these dudes fucking up Alola, let's go fuck him up. And he helps you, and it's great. It gives me all the good feelies. I also think that as much as I could talk about Rainbow Rocket all night long, that's really just a small portion of the post-game offering in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon. There's also the... Oh, God, I feel really terrible. I should have looked at it before we, like, signed on to record. I can't remember the name of it, but the battle facility inside the Festival Plaza, the one where you use rental Pokemon.
Yep.
And you can, like, co-op with other friends, is actually genuinely interesting and compelling content. It's one that requires a great degree of cooperation if you want to succeed at it at high levels, because you need to have high-level allies to help you, and you're not likely to get those just through Street Pass. You're actually going to have to, like... There's a subreddit dedicated to that battle facility so that you can add friends who are actively climbing it, so that you can help each other, which is really dope. I love content in Pokemon that encourages you, even in very passive ways like this, where you're just adding people to your friends list and then never interacting. You're still cooperating, and that's good to me. It also gives you a very different type of battle-oriented postgame, which is great. We've been asking for another Battle Frontier since Platinum, and we haven't got it. And at this point, being realistic, guys, we're probably never going to get it, because Game Freak has decided that they see too small of a return on that type of content. That they put too much time investment into something that a very small portion of their player base is ever going to experience. And as much as those of us who will do it are like, oh, but come on, I really want it, we're probably never going to get it, which is fine. But compared to other recent games, Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon gives us a ton of post-game shit to do. There's the entire Rainbow Rocket story. There is still all the new areas in Pony Plains to explore once you defeat the game, all the Pony Island areas that don't unlock until post-game. You can still go defend your championship. You can still go climb the battle tree. And there's so much to do in comparison to X and Y and Sun and Moon. Obviously, it's not quite as great as, like, the DS games, but we're not getting that back at this point, I don't think. Mm-hmm. It'd be great if we do. God, if Gen 8 gives us a fucking Battle Frontier and, like, a whole new continent post-game and shit, then that would be dope as fuck, and I will sing its praises until the end of time. But given where our expectations were relative coming in to Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, I think that there's great value in the post-game.
Yeah, I obviously haven't gotten a chance to fiddle around with that, but that is really cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, those are our opinions, and obviously, you're probably going to disagree with us, at least some of you. Some of you are sitting there screaming, no, Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon is ass, Gen 7 worst gen, blah, blah, blah. And that's cool. You don't have to agree with us. I'm sure that you have totally valid reasons for thinking these games eat dicks, but... For once, Mess and I agree pretty wholeheartedly on all the major points, and that should count for something, right?
Someone mark that on a calendar. It's never going to fucking happen again. You want to know what's really, really crazy? This came up this week while I was playing Let's Go. When you're playing Let's Go, after you beat Lieutenant Surge, he gives you a fucking autograph. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. I haven't got that far.
It's the same fucking autograph that the player character has in Sun and Moon. And they're supposed to be from Kanto.
Yeah.
And the mother character looks amazingly similar in Let's Go. She just has shorter hair. And her appearance doesn't change based off of which, like, child avatar you pick. Which is really interesting.
I'll be damned. Maybe you got a big brother. Who just stayed in Kanto.
It's just, it's real crazy. Maybe that's why you have soulless eyes. They just took your Eevee from you or your Pikachu from you and said, we're moving to Kanto. We can't move all 1 million Pokemon that you caught in this stupid game. You're going to have to leave them here with Professor Oak. We're just bringing the Meowth. And you're just a broken shell of a person when you get to Alola. Your only relic of your Kanto championship days is Lieutenant Surge's fucking autograph.
Out of curiosity, Messer Engine, if you had to pick one, who's your favorite character in Alola, in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon?
Oh, God. I don't know. I still love Hao a whole lot. I talked about that, I think, on our very first episode of this show. He's just such a nice boy. Here's the thing about rivals, and we talk about this every single generation. If they don't get the rival right, I'm liable to hate everything. And Hal was so different, I think, than other rivals in the past because he was so complimentary. I feel like the friends from X and Y were too, to a certain extent. But Hal went above and beyond. Whenever that dude sees you, he gives you shit. He's like, you're the shit, dude. You kick my ass all the time. Have these potions. And I'm like, you have a self-confidence problem? But yeah, give me them potions. I'll take those revives off of you. Let's get some of these. What are they? The fucking...
The Malasadas.
The Malasadas. And for whatever reason, him just being a genuinely good person makes me really happy for some reason. And the fact that in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, he's actually harder to beat on a fairly regular basis. It's not like earth-shattering, but he's decent and he continues to get better, but is still a good person, is really refreshing to me. Versus Let's Go, where your rival gives you tons of stuff, but feels like a shallow hole of a human being that I hate. So there's that. Maybe it's because they let me name him and I named him Kevin, and no one named Kevin can ever be a winner in my book. But sorry to any Kevins listening.
He's a miserable shell of Blue.
Oh, God, yeah. Especially when Blue shows up and tries to make him feel better about things. He's like, no, you're good. I'm like, no, he's awful. And he stole my goddamn Cubone. No fucking joke. There is a point in this game where that revolves around the Lavender Town, like, story. Mm-hmm. And the dead Marowak and all that stuff. And I'm like, I went to fucking fight Team Rocket for that Cubone. I was like, I'm getting myself a cute ass Cubone for this. And he was like, no, you can hang out with me. And I was like, fuck you. You did not earn this Cubone. You give it back. He doesn't. I was forced to kill my sweet Cubone at the end at fucking Indigo Plateau for the championship. Lapras had to dump a giant wave of water on him and it broke my fucking heart. I was like, you chose the wrong trainer. Why did you do this?
Hal is a really good rival character, though. I think personally, for my money, Charon is the perfect rival. The perfect mix of being your friend while also like wanting to fucking beat your face in all the time. But Hal is also very good.
Fucking Charon can't understand why you used the super effective move on him. You used that move. That's interesting. No, Charon, it's not interesting. It's super fucking effective. Learn your goddamn type chart.
I didn't claim that he was a smart boy, okay?
I do like Charon too. I'm giving you shit, but I do think that Charon and Bianca are some of the best rivals we've had in a long time. Like, we're in series 5 right now, but like, I liked the characters in Gen 4. Like, I liked Dawn a lot, but she wasn't threatening, and the Gen 3 rivals just made me want to slit my wrists. So
fuck no joke.
fucking Charon and Bianca are good. They're actually threatening, and Bianca has killed one of my Pokemon and nearly wiped me another time. So I gotta give props to those guys.
Yeah. It shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone that my favorite character in Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon is Guzma. Guzma's a good boy. I love the fact that at the end of the game, he steps down. He's like, guys, we're disbanding Team Skull. I'm gonna be legit. And he puts a big red, like, tape X over the Team Skull logo on his shirt.
That was so good.
And all the Team Skull grunts are like, yeah, Team Skull is over. What are we doing now, boss? Like, it changes nothing.
One of the things I really love about those games is that throughout Sun and Moon and Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, you have Guzma as this character who, like, failed his island challenge, right? And he's kind of the leader of this petty gang of people who have failed to be something. And it's made very clear in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon at that pivot point for Guzma. They tell him, like, you didn't fail your island challenge. Like, you got there a different way. You may not have all the little pretty things that the captains give you, but you accomplished what the trials are supposed to give you. And that was so impactful for me, that somebody can live a life of trials and tribulations and still succeed on their own terms, in their own path. Hands down, one of the best messages in a Pokemon game.
Yeah, at the end of the day, he's the best villain in the series because he's not a villain. All Guzma ever wanted was a little goddamn respect from somebody that he felt like was legit. And when he gets that, it changes his whole world. I genuinely hope that someday we either return to Alola or even run into him somewhere else. And he's got his own little bug type gym and he's turned it all around. He deserves it.
Yeah, absolutely. I really liked Guzma in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon more than I liked him in Sun and Moon. And I liked him an awful lot there too.
Well, good. Good, good, good. Okay, well, with that, I think that we can safely close the book on Alola, at least until the world tour brings us back around with all the lays and pretty faces and getting our asses beat by Hal's goddamn Alolan Raichu.
Hashtag so deadly.
Yeah. Now, here at Blast Burn Radio, we are getting back on schedule, back on that grind. Next week, you can expect to see episode 2 of Blast Burn Radio Adventures to go live on the feed on Sunday, when you would, again, normally get that showdown spotlight. We're transitioning over to those being the adventures episodes instead. And we'll be back with our week 6 Black and White gameplay on Sunday, December the 9th. We will be doing our Mewtwo Friday Night Fight stream this Friday on November 30th. And this will be the last one for a good little bit. So make sure to participate and help us give this series a good, well, not really a send-off, but a good goodbye for now. And this one's going to be over on Messer Engine's channel at twitch.tv/MesserEngine.
Yeah, come watch us get mocked in Ubers as someone's like, get good, get a Groudon counter, asshole, because that's what always happens when you play in Ubers.
Don't feel bad. I'm going to be using a very bad VGC team, so that's going to be fun for everyone.
I can't wait. It's going to be so exciting.
Also, big, big apologies to our good buddy Chocoboco. We forgot to load his Mamoswine team on our last Friday night fight. That is 100% my bad. I take full responsibility for that. So we'll do a couple of UU matches with Mamoswine on this Friday night fight as well to give that team its spotlight.
Yep. That sounds good. Return to the bust on through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, Messer Engine. Well, for both of us, our week 6 gameplay is mostly finished, if not entirely finished. But I presume that you're still going to be doing some streaming this week as well?
Yeah, I think I should be on tomorrow night, Sunday, whatever day tomorrow is. Good Lord, I don't know the dates. I've been off for a week. Sunday the 25th at 6 p.m. Eastern time. I'll probably be playing some more Let's Go and completing some decks and maybe chaining some fucking Ponytas forever. Don't know yet, though, but I should be on for at least a little bit. So make sure to come check that out at twitch.tv/MesserEngine, 6 p.m. Eastern time.
All right, very good. And I will be streaming on Tuesday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, over on my channel, twitch.tv/JollyByNature. Obviously, I'll be back on Friday over on Messer Engine's channel for the Friday night fight, and I should be back the following Tuesday as well. Same bat time, same bat station. We finally started that Platinum Revenge Tour, and it is already off to a little bit of a bloody start, so that's going to be real, real fun. I've also still got some training to do in Black and White before Week 6 PvP, so you can expect a good little mix of content there, but we will definitely be live and doing our Pokemon thing. And Celeste still needs to complete all of her week 6 gameplay, so I would expect to see her. I can't speak for her, obviously, but I would expect to see her live probably this Thursday and the week after as well. Her normal start time is 7:30 p.m. Eastern over on her channel, twitch.tv/CelesteTheLost.
Yeah, she gets to enjoy those fucking cannons. The most ridiculous thing I've seen in a gym ever. I walked in there and was like, what the fuck?
Gonzo the Great! Now, guys, remember that we do want to hear from you. We want your emails, whether you are playing long list at home, doing your own challenge run you want to talk about. If you think that we are so far up our own asses when it comes to Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, and you want to set us straight, let us know all about it. You can send those emails to blastburnradio@gmail.com or get at the show on Twitter, Facebook, Discord, however you find your Blastburn radios. Now, as always, you can follow me personally at BBRJolly on Twitter.
And I'm at Messer Engine.
And as always, don't forget to check out Mythic Portal Games, Messer Engine's company, for all of your online role-playing assets. If you utilize Roll20 or Astral VTT or any other virtual tabletop, if you are looking for maps and tokens and all sorts of dope shit to make your game a cooler and better place to be, Mythic Portal Games provides all of that to you, lovingly crafted by our very own Messer Engine.
We got Shadowrun tokens coming out this week.
Oh, shit. Only, like, 3 people make those. So that's exciting.
Yeah, Rohane is really excited.
Yeah. As always, don't forget to follow the show at Blastburn Radio on Twitter and Facebook to stay up to date on what all of our hosts are doing around the web. I do want to thank everyone for joining us today. I want to give a very special thank you, as always, to my co-hosts, Messer Engine, and our absent co-host, Celeste. For Blastburn Radio, I am Jolly by Nature. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.
See you next time, folks.
Last Burn Radio is a production of Challenge Accepted Media. This episode was produced by Jolly by Nature, Celeste the Lost, and Messer Engine. Pokemon and all related games and characters are the property and trademark of Nintendo, Game Freak, and the Pokemon Company. Opening music in today's episode includes Game On by Fishy, off the OC Remix album, The Missing No Tracks. Check out this great album at missingno.ocremix.org. Battle music in today's episode provided by Glitch X City. Check out all her work on YouTube or SoundCloud at Glitch X City. Closing music in today's episode is A Lullaby for Trains off the Pokemon Black and White Super Music Collection, available on iTunes. Design work and stream assets provided by Rachel Mondragon. Check out her other work or contact her for commissions on Twitter at Rachichu. Blastburn Radio and its hosts are solely responsible for its content.